Hello, and welcome to the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast, your one stop for co-op news and reviews. This week, Jason Perez is here to entertain you with some more shelf stories.
Yo, my peoples, what's up? Welcome back to the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast. I'm your host, Jason. Thank you so much for stopping by for this really special treat for me. I don't know about y'all, but for me, this is a really special one for a number of reasons. Number one, this is an episode about Tiny Epic. And y'all know I'm a big fan of the Tiny Epic series. If you go on a One Stop Co-op Shop podcast, I have playthroughs of all, except one, but of all the previous titles. I think that we're at 14 at this point, with the 15th that we are going to discuss in this episode. So I'm excited about that in general. I'm also excited about Game of Thrones. So if you saw the preview on the that I put on the One Stop Co-op Shop, if you followed me on my Twitters and everything, you know that I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan. And so when they announced Tiny Epic Game of Thrones, I immediately opened up my email and I said, Darren over at Game One Games, hook me up with a preview. And that's, you know, the magic was indeed on the way. So we're going to talk about Tiny Epic Game of Thrones, which, as you listen to this podcast, will be live on crowdfunding. I believe it's going to be on Kickstarter. And as a part of that, I wanted to invite these two gentlemen on the pod. They've been on my previous pod before, talking about different projects. So it's good to be able to kickstart it back on the One Stop Co-op Shop, the flagship for all things solo co-op. So happy to welcome these two gentlemen back. First is the talent. First is the man who is so productive and so amazing when it comes to these designs. You know him from Tiny Epic. You also know him from Button Shy, a lot of different solo series. We feature some games in there as well, and some games, you know, here and there, Renegade solo series and et cetera. He is Mr. Scott Alms. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good to chat again. Happy to be on.
All right. No, welcome back, man. We've done this maybe two or three times already, and it's always a pleasure, man. It's great. All right. So also joining us is the mastermind of Gamelin Games, which I remember talking to this man when Gamelin Games was a thing, but now it is a capital T thing. And so it's been exciting to watch the development of this company. He is the lead developer of the Tiny Epic Games, as well as the CEO of Gamelin, Mr. Michael Koh. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thank you very much for having me on.
All right. So what we're going to do, we're going to split this into two. But for the first one, we got business to take care of. we're going to do a feature on a big property. Like we said before, Tiny Epic Game of Thrones. This is a different moment for Tiny Epic. This is the first IP, and it's a very, very big IP. You didn't, you know, go into, you know, 17th most popular RPG over here. We're going directly for like maybe a pantheon IP. Like when people mention like fantasy, it's like, okay, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, you know, a couple of others, and then it's like whatever. So like you really went big over here. I am very interested, and I guess I'll go to Michael first. How did this happen? How does the one go about getting a license like this? Now, you can't say too much proprietary-wise, but just kind of a general sense for how Gamelin was able to score this big win here.
Yeah, so this, I've got to tip my hat to USAopoly for our collaboration on this project. So USAopoly reached out to me in Gamelin Games a couple years ago now. It's been a couple years, maybe even a few years. Geez, time goes so fast. And they, you know, a gentleman, Pat Marino with USAopoly, who's a big fan of the Tiny Epic Games and kind of had talked about it a little bit in their internal meetings and then reached out.
USAopoly does IP. Like they have multiple properties that they turn into games, right?
Correct. Yeah, they have a ton and they're known for doing all the Monopoly reskins, right, with all the major IPs, as well as other non-Monopoly titles, as well as other collaborations, right? So they reached out and kind of started the conversation about collaborating with Gamelin Games and specifically the Tiny Epic series. So that conversation kind of started a little bit of as a general brainstorm session of, okay, so, you know, here's some IPs that we're currently working with, that we have great relationships with, you know, what are you guys looking for in terms of, you know, collaborating? Cause I had expressed that, you know, we were interested in kind of expanding the Tiny Epic series into these kinds of collabs. And ultimately it came down to Game of Thrones, and we're big fans of Game of Thrones. I know Scott, you're a big fan. All of the members of the Gamelin team here at the office are big fans. So we were super excited that, you know, that could even be in the conversation, right? Mm. So then it went through a series of...
I apologize for interrupting. The books or the show or both?
For me, shows. For the team here, mostly shows. Scott, I'll let you speak for yourself on books or shows.
It's both. I'm still eagerly waiting the next book as well. I enjoy both.
I can't eagerly await that thing anymore, man. I was eagerly waiting for
I'll eagerly book. Await it forever, man. I'm here.
I'm eagerly awaiting the next season of House of Dragons.
Absolutely.
Same.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. I loved the first season of House of Dragons. That definitely got me all amped up about Game of Thrones all over again.
Absolutely.
And then I went back and rewatched the whole series all over again in preparation for developing this game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it kind of, you know, it started off through a series of pitch concepts and marketing concepts, right? All the different layers that go into taking a game from concept to shelf.
Is that with HBO? Is that with George R. R. Martin himself? How does that all work?
So that's through USAopoly. Our communications kind of go through USAopoly, okay. And then USAopoly communicates with WB. We have had some pitch meetings that did involve members of all three parties as being part of the pitch meeting. So there has, you know, definitely been a lot of direct communication. But kind of once we got the green light on concepting, then most of the approval process, which includes everything, as you can imagine, an IP like Game of Thrones is protected and very special and dear to the heart of those that have it. And so everything gets approved, every little thing. Whereas it's a wonderful process to go through. and we're just happy to kind of be nearing the other end of it. And, you know, as you said, when this goes live, the Kickstarter at this point will also be live, which means we've gotten all of the approvals. And so we're super excited to be in this position and to be playing around with toys from one of our absolute most favorite IPs. So
it really pays to go to the cons and go to Gamma. You know, these are the places where, you know, publishers talk with publishers. And if you happen to have the IP, then that opens the door. So like that kind of process.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely have had very productive meetings at Gen Con over these kinds of collaborations and whatnot. So it most certainly pays to be out there and to kind of be representing and be where the people are.
Awesome. So then we have to, you know, take from concept to reality, and that is Scott's job. And when Michael first introduced, okay, we're going to working on a tiny epic Game of Thrones game, how many prototypes did you make? Four?
It did start with the pitch first, so we bounced around a lot of things that would work and didn't work. So, so we had to pitch a little bit what we had envisioned, but I mean, I couldn't even guess how many versions we went through. Like, there's whole rounds of versions that had even before I sent like my initial prototype to Michael. Completely different concepts, different levels of interactions you have with the characters. How far to zoom in? How far to zoom out? Where's a lot of the play at? What's dice based was card, like so many things played around with it first.
What were some of your initial ideas as a creative in terms of, okay, you have this sandbox, right? Because sometimes, like I spoke with the folks at Z-Man when they did the Clone Wars game, and they were kind of given a sandbox. Okay, what do you want to make a game about? And they, for their own sanity, were like, okay, just Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And limited themselves that way. So that was their approach, was to kind of like, you know, isolate a part of the sandbox and then, okay, we're going to build from there. So was your process a little bit the same? Did you want to isolate book or show or different kinds of experience, or how did you go about that?
Yeah, good question. So like a lot of the initial decisions were at kind of like, what level do we want to approach it? Do we want to zoom in on like a season, or maybe even like an episode? I mean, there are plenty of Game of Thrones episodes you could make an epic game around, right?
Yeah, Red Wedding or Battle of the Bastards or
Yeah, you could play that as a game and it would be amazing. It'd be brutal, but it would be amazing. You know, it's like right on the box. One thing that Michael and I have challenged each other on like every single day for Tiny Epics, how do we make it more epic? Get that epic feeling. So we went big picture. We went, how do we make it feel like you lived and breathed like several seasons, several books of Game of Thrones in a short gaming session. So
and I'll,
I
and
think having
anybody
that.
who's seen my playthrough of the demo, I think I quoted from four different seasons, just like different moments. So it's like I had the Rangers walking in the and I had back when the Martells and the Lannisters, like that, like the game, and we'll talk about the game mechanics in a little bit, but I don't care, it's Game of Thrones people, you have to wait. The game managed to be this theme receptacle for a lot of different moments. So that was a thing that y'all decided fairly early on in the process.
Yeah, and some of the elements came into place like pretty early and stuff like that. So we decided on that more like macro scope. Like we wanted to feel like you're playing maybe like multiple seasons or multiple books. At the same time, there were some elements we knew we wanted to make sure you were able to see. We wanted to make sure the characters were brought to life and across all the different houses. We wanted to make sure we wanted a map pretty early. There's plenty of different ways we could have taken it where you didn't have a map, but we wanted to see Westeros in there, right? I mean, we especially if you're thinking about like the theme at the beginning or the opening trailer, which we could all do right now, if we wanted
Do
to,
do
just
do
there we
do
go.
do do.
Like just zooming in around and just seeing the scale of everything. We wanted like a map to be the center point, and having that real feel of everyone conniving over this land. So that first step was like, how do we want to feel during the game? How do we want to feel like you're part of Game of Thrones? How do you want to feel like where your strategy is? Like what's the emotional arc the players are going through it? Like that was kind of what guided all those initial pieces. And then after that, it was getting really tactical. All right, if we want people to feel like they're controlling an entire house, like you are the whole land, you're the Lannisters when you're playing. How do you feel like you're the whole house? How do you feel like you're making and breaking alliances? After we knew that's how we wanted people to feel, it started to get real tactical. How do we start to bring events from the story to life? And we'll talk about mechanics, bringing in like the event cards, like being able to bring in particular moments of the shows and books that people really wanted to breathe,
So
wanted to
let's talk
live.
about, I mean, since you mentioned it, I mean, we're there now. Talk a little bit about the basic mechanism. I mean, it's kind of a grab bag of everything, or a lot of things from Tiny Epic, right? The basic rhythm evokes the kingdoms with the area control, but like a blown out version of kingdoms. And then you have the multi-use cards of a Vikings, and then we have the dice of the galaxies and a couple of other like little pieces. Talk a little bit about what mechanically you were able to put together.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a awesome dice collection mechanic that'll, as you said, it's like a little reminiscent of galaxies on it. One of the things that really gives you a lot of power for that is it gives you some powerful actions, but a little bit of randomness and constraint that you're never able to do exactly what you want to. So you have to really figure out your way. Like you are not infinitely powerful in this game that all resources always available for you. You're given some options to be flexible. But you really have to strategize how to use what's in front of you the best. Same feeling from Galaxies, which has been just such a fan favorite of the series before. But we really twisted it on its head when we brought in the multi-use card system, because not what the multi-use cards bring in, which help power your battles. It helps you form alliances. And each one also has a unique event from the story of Game of Thrones. Because one of the things we wanted to really bring to life is those moments that everyone loves and thinks about from the show. Wanted to make sure they
Spoiler
really
alert,
were.
if you reverse the spoilers, don't look at the
Yeah.
event deck. It's all there.
Yeah. In the game, they'll come out in probably different orders. It could be different people. Like the Red Wedding might have a different mix of houses in it. It might happen in different arc in the game and things like that, but we wanted to make sure we had all these callbacks to all these big moments, and really they impact play. Like it's every action can really change the state of the board, which is another big like emotional arc we wanted to. Just like whenever you're experiencing the story of Game of Thrones, whenever like things could change on a dime, like you're like this house is ready to conquer the world, and then 5 minutes later, it's all over. They're going to take forever to recover and things like that. So we wanted
I
those
love
big
the
emotional
mechanic
arcs.
of the alliances. They that plays into that a lot because so it's a dudes in a map game, right? And you have area control, and like at the end of every scoring round, you're gonna score based on the areas that you control. That's like the basics of it, and then there's stuff on top of it. And one of the things in terms of that swing, right? So like, let's say you're investing in an alliance, and if you have an alliance with this non-player house, then it's almost like you've doubled your troop counter, depending on if it's a strong house, maybe you've even tripled your troop count. And so you're feeling really great, but then someone figures out how to muck up that alliance or sneak in there and either take it away from you or just like ninja it for themselves. Now all of a sudden your strength is maybe halved or even worse, just on what the game calls plotting. So like, we didn't even defeat you in battle. Like, all I just did was shift alliances. So I that was pretty cool. I think the trade-off there is that you do have these four NPC houses. Like this game is pretty chunky. And I talked to Michael about it. I'll bring Michael in a second, but like, there's a lot going on, way more to me than a tiny epic. I think it even exceeds Vikings in terms of like things to remember going on, et cetera. So talk a little bit about that experience of like, yeah, you have these swings and this accommodation, but it kind of comes at a complexity budget that's higher to me. And first of all, do you agree with that? And B, what do you think about how that approach?
Yeah, there's certainly some elements that bring this a little bit higher. I think this is one that to get the basics of the game is probably a step up in like galaxies or things like that. But it's not too bad to get like the general turn structure and stuff down. Playing well, how to balance alliances, how to use event cards in the right way, how to really like play against the other players in a novel way. That's where a lot of like the elevation comes through, because they certainly new players, they're going to be able to figure it out. They're going to have an enjoyable first game, and then they're going to end up in, at the end of the game, they're going to really think about different ways they could switch up their strategy. There's going to be more things for them to explore after game one. Like after game one, you're not going to at all feel like you've explored everything this game has to offer. There's so many layers, especially as you called out like the alliance system and things like that, how to properly leverage other houses, which could benefit you in many different ways. And things like that. One kind of unique thing about, having an IP with Game of Thrones, stuff like that, is it also comes with some certain expectations as far as like what the game's gonna feel like and things like that, which is has a pro and con to it. Because on the con side, there's some stuff that you need to make sure you kind of have to feel like a Game of Thrones game. Like for example, the alliance system, which is personally one of the most like proud mechanics I have in the game, because I feel like that's a unique one for our tiny epic universe. And then I think it really separates it from a lot of other, as you said, like dudes on the map games, like this alliance system. It really makes it feel different than a lot of the other ones. But it wouldn't feel Game of Thrones if there wasn't an alliance system. Like if you were just controlling your own army, you had no way of like leveraging power from other people on the map, like it wouldn't feel like Game of Thrones if you couldn't. So from a theme point of view, you kind of have to really make sure you're hitting the expectations, because when you call it a Game of Thrones game, people are going to have expectations for how that feels, which I'm very hopeful people agree that I think we hit that, and I hope folks agree with that. At the same time, luckily, players also can be a little bit more invested and put a little bit more effort into learning the rules and the mechanics, because there's that love for the IP as well. Like they're it's not a completely unknown at this point. People know Tiny Epic, they know Game of Thrones for sure. So they're probably willing to put in a little bit of extra rules learning in there. I still think we're in that bucket of like casual plus for these. I mean it's on the yeah, it's probably more like I would actually say it's simpler than I would probably still put dungeons as their most complex. I don't know what you would think, Michael. I'd probably say this
No.
is top 33%, but
Yeah, I would say that actually, just to kind of speak to that complexity a little bit, I would so really we talked a lot about that in the beginning stages of the development for this game, knowing that we were going to go into a gigantic IP here, and we intended to capture so much of it, right? But at the same time, we want the player experience to be straightforward and easily approached, right? So that was kind of where the decision came to use the dice mechanism, where it's kind of actually a hybrid dice mechanism, but even a little bit new in its own innovative way. But it kind of is a hybrid between the limited action selection system of like Tiny Epic Kingdoms or even Tiny Epic Quest, while using the dice allocation aspect of Tiny Epic Galaxies, but kind of cutting that down a little bit more. So yes, really the when is your turn, you actually don't have a whole bunch to choose from in the sense that you have your die and it's already been rolled, and that's going to tell you what your potential bonus action is. And then you have the action mat, which is, depending on where your turn order is, may already have actions locked out. So you're not even able to choose those ones. So that's essentially six actions that you get to choose from. And then you've got your six die faces. So your choices, really, when it's your turn, is like a few choices. It's less than six choices, right? And then from there, though, how you execute that and what you do with that choice is where your strategy unfolds. So any given opportunity that you have to activate something is going to be very simple in scope, but then how you evolve that is going to be more complex. And like, so that's exactly kind of what Scott was saying there, right? Is the strategy is big, but the actual execution and the amount of choices you have at any given time is really not that big, which is awesome. And that's helpful to keeping the game approachable and at a nice fast pace. So everything moves pretty quickly. And we do have the follow mechanic that we saw through some of our other Tiny Epic titles is a very successful mechanic that has been effective at keeping the players engaged, which is always a goal of ours in the Tiny Epic series, is very little downtime as much as possible, right? And so there were different iterations of the follow mechanic in Tiny Epic Game of Thrones in earlier developments. And then eventually it just came to where it was like, everybody's just going to be able to follow the actions without any costs. It just more fun, faster, right? Like, let's just get everybody involved, which is fantastic. So you're always thinking about kind of what can I do based on other people's actions. But when it comes around to your turn, you just have a couple of choices to make. It's really quite simple in that way. So mm-hmm. I think that is actually something that has been very successful in the development process of this game.
Think of it in terms of, and this is going off of conversations off of our Discord. So shout out to the One Stop Co-op Discord. Go ahead and check the show notes and see if you want to join the conversation. So I think what I encountered in my play was I made a couple of rule mistakes. So like I made the play, sent it off to you, and you're like, okay, you got this, and this wrong. And there was one particular mistake of like, okay, I am taking my troops and I'm invading, a place, because that's what you do, right? You invade places. And where do the defeated troops go? And I messed that up. And that ended up being like a pretty significant, almost like domino effect of, okay, well now this. And I guess when I regard complexity, like I hear what you're saying about the choices are simple, but maybe I don't have the space, cognitive space, to like remember all the little interactions, right? And there's a chance for something to go awry. And I guess when I say this is a little bit higher, like I think of like a Galaxies, or I think of some of the other Tiny Epics, especially the early ones, that didn't happen so much. Like they were more, whatever you call it, streamlined or whatever. Is that a consideration when you look at something like that? Do you get that feedback from playtests? It's like, okay, I like this, but I'm struggling to remember XYZ little rule. And do you find that is sometimes can be a barrier, or do you not find that?
No, yeah, absolutely. And so that is kind of something that kind of works itself out in the wash, right? There's a lot that ends up on the editing room floor. And so, I mean, depending on kind of what we're trying to achieve in terms of, again, like what Scott said, kind of the emotional feeling for the player and how we want to get there, right, is going to shift kind of how much it's going to take, right? So, I mean, it's definitely, we take the feedback and we work it into the design.
And that's where a lot of the fun, like sausage making, ends up being, because there's any rule that's commonly forgotten, like, can go a lot of different ways during dev, because sometimes it's we call up, Ben Schulman, our awesome graphic designer, and be like, we need a reminder somewhere. Like, this is a critical rule, but we need to bring it to life on the board, making sure it's always in front of people. Sometimes it's as simple as that, like a lot of like scoring conditions, stuff like that could be. Sometimes it's a rule that's critical, but could be solved in a different way. And sometimes Yeah, sometimes we maybe just have to massage it or make it a little bit easier or bring it like in a different phase of the rule or stuff like that. It's, I would say Michael and I and the rest of the team, we spend like months going through that little stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It is that exact process that we spend a lot of time going through. But you know, there's also, you know, the Tiny Epic universe and the Tiny Epic series from the beginning has been about capturing a variety of all sorts of genres, mechanics, and depth levels, right? So if you're getting into the Tiny Epic series, there's going to be something in that series for you, almost no matter what kind of gamer you are, whether you like the games to be really, really streamlined, or if you like a little bit more complex games, right? Or if you like medieval themes or space themes or Western themes, right? So if you like pick up and deliver, or if you like worker placement. So we're kind of covering the whole spectrum of the new, you know, hobby gaming space and all the different great things that can be achieved in that space, all within the series. So you're definitely going to see a variety of complexity levels throughout the series. And you find the games that really work well for you and your game group based on the theme, the genre, the mechanics, and the complexity. And that's great. And that's what we're trying to achieve. And with this one, kind of as Scott had set out earlier, being really just such a fantastic opportunity with such a rich theme, we wanted to really kind of dive into this one and make it as epic as possible while still fitting the confines of our tiny epic box, which is always the most exciting challenge of how can we really capture the most experience in this box that can still fit easily in the front pouch of your backpack, or you know, and you can take it with you, you know, and it doesn't take up very much space on your shelf, right? So that's been a really exciting challenge, but it definitely is going to be one of the heavier ones. But I do think it's not the heaviest game in the series, but yeah.
Okay.
It's up there.
It's the top third, as was Scott
said. Yeah, it's up there, but as the IP justifies, I mean, you definitely want to get a lot out of this.
I remember when we did our play session together, you said you want this to be a game that people invest in and play multiple times and, you know, have a group going and different experiences, like that kind of thing. And that you almost need a little bit more crunch if you want to satisfy a group like that.
Yeah, absolutely. This one is the kind of game where it can become a replacement for a lot of other games in the sense that it can be kind of a lifestyle game with your group, right? If you have a nice set group and you meet with that group on a regular basis, this game definitely is poised to be one to return to the table time and time again for the richness and experience that you're going to get out of it. Whether your group is a competitive cutthroat, kind of take that group, or honestly, and we haven't kind of touched on this yet in the podcast, but the Ice and Fire expansion brings in a cooperative element, which is phenomenal. And so if your group is not a take that group, but you guys like Game of Thrones and you want to play cooperatively, then the expansion is going to provide a full cooperative experience. But again, that is also going to be something that you're going to see a lot of depth come out through multiple plays. So it makes it worth the investment, which is, you know, at the Tiny Epic investment level is you know, pretty reasonable.
Oh, I'll get to the Ice and Fire expansion. I got two more questions. That was the last one. So speaking of, you know, investment and playing the game over and over again, I used to, when I lived in New York, I used to be part of a group that played the Game of Thrones fantasy flight game. And it feels like it is not a shrunken down version of the Game of Thrones. That game is very different, but the play experience of like sitting above the Westerosi table. So like in Dragonstone, there was that big map, you know, you look and Stannis or whoever was there at the time would look at the map and look at the things. So your game is trying to evoke that. And the Fantasy Flight game is trying to evoke that. The Fantasy Flight game takes 6 hours if you have enough people, and there's a lot more negotiation. This game doesn't really have negotiation. Like you have your players and you have your alliances, and it's very Euro. Like, and I think that's kind of a Scott's taste as a designer, and the Tiny Epic kind of tends towards that Euro end. So talk a little bit about, did you think about exploring that space of more of a negotiation aspect in this design?
And that almost kind of leads into like that alliance mechanic too, because like how the Fantasy Flight game, which is an awesome design, like is you are negotiating with other players, and it's something that really shines at like the higher player counts because of that negotiation element. One of the things we always want to deliver for Tiny Epic is, does this still play great too? Does it play great solo, right? Which this podcast could appreciate.
Absolutely.
So we wanted to bring in like, how do you bring in some of that like deal making and like with other alliances without requiring six people at the table? And also a negotiation can really lengthen a game too. I mean, if I think about some like classics in there, Chinatown now, Waterfall Park, like there's only four rounds in that game, but that game can take over an hour because that's just how long negotiation can take for game time. So that's kind of like what led to that alliance mechanic in that way. It's something that was more easily scalable, but still got some of that, like how do I work with other houses, pull in some of their powers, pull in some of the heroes from their area and the benefits from having their army at my side. But something that's scalable for player counts. And then also something that's a little bit more streamlined time-wise. Because I don't think we want to do a 6 hour playtime for a Tiny Epic anytime soon.
The negotiations, at least in the core game, the cutthroat take that game, right? The negotiations are kind of strong-armed, right? It's kind of intimidation negotiating tactics where it's like, okay, I have aligned with the Stark House and I have done well with spreading them out, getting a lot of territories, which is going to make it extremely tempting for other players to then want to take over the Starks. And so there's definitely a significant amount of table talk, which you would see in a negotiation style game. But this table talk is a little bit more like, hey, if you're going to start coming for the Starks, you better watch out because I'm going to make you my number one target then. I've got a lot of other things I could be doing. I only have so many actions I can do in this game, but if you're going to make taking my Starks your number one, well, then I'm going to make you pay for that, right? And you say that out loud. And so then you kind of put that intimidation factor and they're like, okay, well, maybe I'll give you a round off before I jump on the Starks. And by then it's like, okay, well, now I've been able to secure it. So come at me if you will, but you're not going to succeed, right? So there's definitely a lot of that fun table talk element that kind of sits in lieu of maybe a more passive or traditional style negotiation.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, a negotiation game like that, there's player elimination. There were times where you'd have the 6 hour game, but then Greyjoy is reduced to a troop, and that person may as well just go get a hot dog. So, which is what I often did. And this is not that game. This is a game where it's like there's 6 rounds of scoring, and you could be quote unquote eliminated, but like you can take a path where you're small, and you just manage to find other routes to points, and that's you win with that without those points. And that seems very Tiny Epic. But that seems like a pretty a good through line through the entire series.
Well, that's a great point to bring up, Jason, is really because that is something that definitely was one of the challenge points during development of the game was making sure that it didn't get to a point where any player truly felt out of the game, and also that we didn't let a runaway leader situation occur either, right? And that's always a very delicate balance, especially in a minis on a map style game. When you're dealing with battles and just straight up take that elements, right, is kind of balancing the risk and reward of starting a battle and then also the aftermath of how that's going to affect the other players at the table, right? That finding that balance is really, really important because we don't want to put anybody out of the game. We want everybody to be engaged in the game throughout all 6 rounds. And so through the multiple scoring methods in Tiny Epic Game of Thrones, you don't have to just you don't just have to battle to win your way to the Iron Throne. You can plot and work your alliances because you're going to get as many points through that process potentially as you could through battling, right? And then we also have other mechanics in the game that do slow the leader down slightly and accelerate the players that are behind. And so the game, you'll, as players will experience, the games always finish very, very close in score. And it really is a tight score at the end for all the players, regardless, really. And the few points that are going to make the difference are going to be the critical times when a player played the right card at the right time. They made just the right move. They were able to kind of, you know, use the whisper action to get the right event to play at the right time. And really it comes down to that timing. It comes down to kind of knowing what's in your hand and knowing how to play it and when to play it. And that's going to separate you from the other players. But again, it's not going to create such a separation that other players are going to feel like they can't come back. So it's just going to give you small edges. But if you can combine those small edges over time, then you're going to be crowned, you know, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms at the end.
all that thematic stuff. Last question. You mentioned the Ice and Fire expansion. That is the fully cooperative expansion. So in the base game, there is solo, and I demonstrated a round of the solo in my playthrough and my demo, and then a round of the cooperative. Scott, how much fun was it designing the Night King, the Draco, the Ice Dragon? Like, if you want the Game of Thrones experience, like the later seasons, like, it's all in there, and you crammed a lot. There's Nightwalkers in there. So talk a little bit about, like, what you put in there and how much fun it was getting it all in there.
Yeah, so it's definitely a nice little twist from the base game, which is very much, you know, confrontational. You're trying to take over. Especially for players who might not like a higher confrontation game, like, has an opportunity for actually everyone to play together. The real fun thing I'll just mention about the development for the Ice and Fire is just that how much, like, the whole team came together to really help bring it to life. I mean, just everyone had some great ideas to bring in. And at this point, we've been already living and breathing the game for a bit. So it, like, really, really came together as a team. How it kind of flows, you know, the map expands. You can now go north of the wall as the White Walker and the Night King's army starts to form up there. He really becomes quite the menacing presence as he shows up on the board, and he is just brutal as he starts to move his way through the kingdom. So the players really have to really work together to form the right alliances. It brings in an exploration mechanic as well, where you're gonna have to start finding dragon glass and the Valyrian steel in order to defeat these really ruthless enemies who start off at very high strength. You're gonna have to slowly start to whittle them down through some of these discoveries. And it's kind of like you mentioned some, like, the negotiation and stuff like that. Like, this gives you so much table talk as you're coordinating with the other players, really trying to figure out the best way to defeat this enemy, because he is strong, and you really have to work together to make it. You really have to coordinate. Like, you know, we need someone up here fighting off the White Walkers. We need someone down here exploring. We need someone to defend our alliances, because he's trying to take all those. Like, you really need to, like, really work together. And the nice thing about it, since everyone does have, like, their own unique hand of cards as well, that helps eliminate some of, like, the not king making, that's not the word, like, quarterbacking, because everyone does have their own abilities or own things that they know that only they can uniquely do. So that does help some as well. Like, each faction still has their own personality and own positioning. Mm-hmm. So you could always speak on behalf of your house as you're working on that. So it's, if you like the later seasons and you want to see just the Night King come in as a truly terrifying presence, it's such a fun cooperative game. I mean, we've had so much fun with it.
I know in our early playtesting of the cooperative expansion, we were all so familiar with the competitive version of the game, in which you keep everything you're going to do very, very secret. And so we kind of went into the cooperative game after Scott had sent us the rule set, and we set it all up and got into it. And we're all still kind of playing similar to how we were playing the competitive game. We were all kind of keeping our cards close to our chest, you know, and we were just losing. It was like, wow, this is really, really hard. Like, and so then it was like, well, why do we got to, like, keep our cards so secret? Let's just all play open-handed. Let's just all lay our cards out. Let's all kind of have an idea as to what each other can do. This is a cooperative game. And then let's kind of discuss, okay, so I've got this event, which is going to be able to create an opportunity for other players. And it's like, well, you know, that is great, but it would be a little bit better if I could do this first. So could you hold on to that for one more round, right? And it's like, okay, not a bad idea. I'll hold on to it because it'll still be as good for me next round, but it'll be better for you next round. So let's do that, right? And so that kind of table talk started once we started playing open-handedly. And it was like, okay, now maybe we got a chance. And we still lose quite a bit, but that definitely has allowed us a few victories. And so that kind of table talk and just kind of collaborating, working together as a team, really brought the game to life.
The boss feels very intrusive. So there is a pretty significant, you know, at the end of round phase. So it's like, okay, I pull a card and the Night King shows up and maybe conquer the castle, brings up, like, there's a bunch of stuff that happens at the round. And then the Night King goes again after each individual turn and messes up your alliances or puts more troops on the board or whatever they're doing. And so that's a difficult one to measure because, like, there's a fine line between the boss being very threatening and the boss being fiddly. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's, how did you nodded there. So, I mean, I guess, like, talk a little bit about that, getting that balance right.
Oh yeah. Cause we were talking about, like, the tiny rules and stuff like that, like, earlier on, like that last, like, taking the game from 95% to 100%, like, the Night King was so much of a focus for the cooperative game. Like, how do we make it feel like he's just a person and not like an event? Like, how do we make him feel like he's a person, like an actual threat, not just like a bad event card that kind of gets thrown up in the game. And kind of where we ended up, you kind of hinted at this a little bit, is that, like, there's these big moments where he makes a major shift, where he, like, moves into a castle, like a big, like, battle where he goes and conquers an area and drops White Walkers in the area. But throughout the round, he is continuously, like, picking at your alliances and causing fear and unrest throughout the kingdom to keep that pressure up. And also, it was important to us to make sure that there's still, like, events happening throughout the round. So, like, one of the things we didn't want to have happen was that as soon as the Night King went, the players had all these turns and everything would go perfectly and there was no surprises along the way. So making sure the Night King was doing something to disrupt the plans a little bit as they were going was very key. Some of the other things, like event cards are not event cards, the exploration tokens, but can have some negative events. Some of that caters to that.
I forgot about those too. It's my turn and I'm getting ambushed.
I know. Or certainly if you engage in a battle with a White Walker and they end up beating you and you thought you had that one, like, stowed up for sure. Like, there's some of that, but yeah, we wanted to make sure we had, like, these big moments that you're kind of, like, worried about the whole turn. Like, you're really worried where the Night King's going to move and what castle he's going to attack next. And you might be really coordinating your movements around where he might go. But yeah, we wanted that constant threat throughout the round too, that he's kind of picking at your plans. Everything's not going to go as smoothly throughout the turns as you want. So that's kind of where things settle. But I'll tell you what, the level of, like, I mean, I'm sure you could hear it just as Michael and I talked about, the level of care we've been putting into this game and fretting over every single rule. It's been quite the journey. But yeah, it's even just the memories of the dev is coming back as you're asking these questions. Like, yeah, we would fret for weeks over, like, a single rule for the Night King in a good way, in a way that made a great game at the end.
So. And that is for everybody to determine for themselves. So we can definitely wrap the interview here, but that is not it when it comes to Tidy Up Game of Thrones. We will have a link to the project in the show notes. So check a look. I have a feeling this is going to fuck people. So it's not like it's going to too much of a doubt there. It's just a question of, you know, is this a new phase for Game on Games? And is this something where it's like, okay, wow, this one blows the doors off. We're going to go towards the IP, or, you know, we don't know what it's going to do. What I do know is that I really enjoyed my demo. I'm looking forward to getting it to the table. I'm a big Game of Thrones geek, and ultimately y'all delivered, like, you evoked that in me, right? Like, you evoked the Game of Thrones geek. And that's, you know, I can say stuff about the mechanism, people can kind of judge that for themselves, but in terms of me being a theme person, that was like, okay, here, I'm Littlefinger, and now I'm this, now I'm that, now I'm the other thing, and all that kind of stuff. So if that is interesting to you, as a listener, go ahead and check the project out. And let us know what you think in the comments below, in Discord, and all the other places. So any parting shots when it comes to the last word, Tiny Epic Game of Thrones? We'll start with Michael.
Well, all right. Winter is coming. So it's, yes, we are launching, like, I guess this is going to be after that. So April 9th, but check it out. Yep. Check out the page. Check out, there's four play modes, really. There, you've got your competitive mode, you've got your cooperative mode, you've got your solo mode using the core game mechanics, which is the competitive solo mode. And then you have a cooperative solo mode in which the solo-driven rival in the competitive mode will now be your partner in the cooperative mode, and you can work with that solo partner against the Night King. So really, you've got four different game variants in this package. And so, yes, I mean, it is coming, and it is all coming all at once, and it is amazing.
Scott, give us some excitement over there.
Hope everyone checks out the campaign. It's been one that we've been just living and breathing for so long. It was so fun to work with this team, and it really energized the whole team. So I hope everyone can enjoy and see the passion we put into this one. It's been one that's continues to hit my table long after, like, we've hit our development milestones, because it's just been a joy. So hope everyone checks it out. Hit that pledge button. Let's make it
right.
Big.
All right, Scott Alls, Michael Coe, thank you so much for taking the time for talking about your latest on the One Stop Co-op Shop.
Thank you very much for having both of us on.
If you can change your mind, change your world, people. So until next time, later, everybody.
Thanks for joining us again for the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast. Check out our YouTube channel at One Stop Co-op Shop. Also, join us for games and discussion on our Discord channel. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/onestop or leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another top 5 list.